I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. Eight to they fool. Run through the night, playing with your life. Going against the pack that's risking your life.
All right, folks, we're back with another edition of Red and White Podcast. I'm your host, Evan. Not here with Will. Will's not here, but I am joined with two special guests, Bob, Chef from the Cocaine Willie podcast. Just spent an hour on their channel recording, talking NC State. We will link that below with all the description and stuff. But guys, thanks for jumping over here real quick. I know we just did this impromptu, but I appreciate having y'all and appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
Likewise. Appreciate being here.
Yes, sir. When I told my people that I was going to be on the Cocaine Willie podcast, they said, "What the hell is a Cocaine Willie?" And I know I just asked y'all this on your podcast, but tell the NC State folks what a Cocaine Willie is.
Yeah, so Cocaine Willie is our namesake. He is an alternate logo for K-State that was used predominantly in the 70s and 80s, I will say. But he is a very, you know, we just like him a lot. He looks like he just snorted a couple lines in a bathroom stall in a club in the 70s somewhere. So big Cocaine Willie fans and hence the namesake for the pod.
Yeah, it gives it a you know, our podcast a little spice, and it's kind of it's a symbol of what we do on our podcast.
I love it. And Carter Finley, where the Pack plays, there in all the bathrooms, it's spray painted on the wall. It says, "Do not throw liquor bottles in the toilets." Right. It's very, I feel like there's the same vibe going there, right? I feel like there's a lot of similarities there. I do actually have that coming on a t-shirt because I think that's going to be dope.
But that's yeah. Awesome.
Hell so yeah. It's a very similar vibe. So as a K-State fan, right, we've never played, and don't regurgitate all my answers because I just gave you guys all the answers. But what do y'all think of NC State when you hear, "Hey, we're playing NC State in the Pop-Tarts Bowl"?
Chef, go ahead.
Yeah, for me, NC State's exciting. I mean, I'm an early 30s kid, born in the 90s. So when you think of NC State, you think of, you know, a lot of great players, first overall draft pick players, players that I grew up watching, and it's exciting to, you know, get to play a team that you haven't faced before, an ACC opponent. We'll probably get into why, you know, we're the two runts of the conferences of the Power Four now, so. Just banding up and going head to head with each other for a little bit of bragging rights is always good too. So NC State, it's exciting to me. You know, it's one of those schools that, you know, you just get built up and you're ready to go.
Yeah. This is a matchup I was really excited about. And I feel like some of the other options that we could have gotten for this bowl game just weren't as exciting for K-State fans. But seeing NC State, seeing that it's a top 25 matchup is obviously incredibly appealing. When I think about NC State, I also think back to Phillip Rivers, but I think of other guys. I think of Russell Wilson as well. I think of Jacoby Myers. I think of Jacoby Brissett. And then currently playing for the Chiefs, where I'm a Chiefs fan, Joe Tooney as well, and love what he's done on our offensive line. He's been an incredible addition. But yeah, I'm excited for this matchup. I don't know. I also think of Jimmy V every once in a while because, you know, V week rolls around once a year, and I always see him running out onto the court. And yeah, that makes me think of NC State as well.
And I'm an aesthetic guy too. So, you know, the colorway of red and black. I mean, we're a purple team, so it's, you know, you're born into it. You can't really adopt it, but red and black, naturally, that just screams an intense team. And I like it. I like the look of the team.
I love that. And I mentioned earlier on your podcast in 2003, we beat the hell out of Kansas for y'all, 56-26.
Yeah.
Phillip Rivers, you can thank him for that beatdown. That was great. I'm going to steal this question that y'all asked me. Who's on your Mount Rushmore for K-State?
Zoinks for K-State. I'll go first. It's got to be, and this is going to sound recent. You know, we'll have our reasons, and Bob could back me up on this. But the three obvious ones for me are Michael Bishop, Darren Sproles, and Terrence Newman. Those are my three. And then there's one more. And he's on the current team that you're going to be playing in this Pop-Tarts Bowl, and that's Cooper Beebe. A unanimous offensive first team All-American. One of the best offensive linemen we've ever had. Not only consensus, but unanimous. He's going to be a first round. He was a first round talent last year, and he came back and he decided to stick it out for his senior season, which, you know, that in today's day and age of football, when you got a guy that's completely bought in like that, it's something special. And he's all K-State. I know his dad. It's awesome. He is on my Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, for me, it's going to start with Michael Bishop and then move to L. Roberson, because he was the first K-State quarterback to win a conference championship since the 1930s.
Whoa.
Then Darren Sproles, who was also on that team with L. Roberson, and you mentioned it on our podcast, but he's who you think of when you think of K-State. And then I'm going to throw in Deuce Vaughn, because I would have had Colin Klein on that list, but Colin Klein did us dirty a couple weeks ago. So until further notice, Colin Klein is on my shit list. I've got a framed picture of his Sports Illustrated cover from 2012 when I was a sophomore at K-State, and I had to remove it from my wall and face it against the wall for a little while. We're just putting him in timeout until further notice, but I'm throwing Deuce Vaughn on there because he is also a Big 12 champion. That's major criteria for me, is being able to win a Big 12 championship, to be on that, you know, Mount Rushmore, if you will. But Michael Bishop is the one exception to that. And he just reached heights that K-State had never reached before when he was quarterback. So I'm throwing Deuce in there. I hope he can have a fruitful career in the NFL. We'll see if there's a team out there who can leverage him appropriately and have an offensive line who knows how the hell to block for a guy that's 5'6".
That's a generous 5'6".
Yeah.
He was unbelievable watching him play, man. He was unreal. He was wild. I forgot him when we were talking about K-State, but I was thinking about Terrence Newman was the other one. I was thinking of Darren Sproles, Terrence Newman. What is your – both of you guys have nice setups back there, right? Don't look at my office behind me, but what is your favorite piece of sports memorabilia that you've got back there, K-State or not?
Ooh, not necessarily K-State.
I've got a lot of shit behind me here.
I don't know. I don't know if you know this, but I live in Ohio, and I've been in Ohio for, I don't know, over a decade now. I got a ton of Ohio State sign shit. It's all set up. I mean, it's Buckeyes everywhere around me. Buckeyes in this house. I'm the only K-State fan in here. But, you know, we got custom art, custom wood art, you know, little things like that. But mostly the big stuff is Ohio State stuff.
Yeah, my favorite piece of sports memorabilia, I've got this signed photograph of George Brett from the 80s. I've got a ball signed by the 1970, whichever one of the 70s Oakland A's teams that won the World Series with Reggie Jackson. I've got that ball signed behind me. But for me, it's probably this mini helmet behind me, because it's signed by, I want to say, like the class of 2010 of the K-State Ring of Honor. It's got Terrence Newman and Mark Simo on there. So some good dudes on there.
All right, let's get into the Wildcats now. I know you guys, K-State finished 8-4. Felt like it was a bit of an up and down season. Win a couple, lose one, win a couple, lose one. What's your overall feeling of, you know, happiness or success was this season?
Well, shucks.
Or not at all.
No, I definitely have feelings on this season. It's one of those where you have high expectations and you're coming off of something that, you know, you just don't do very often. So we're Big 12 champions in 2022, and we're going into this season, we're returning a quarterback, we're returning our entire offensive line. Even the top seven offensive linemen, we're returning all of them. Defense is, you know, always improving. We lose some pieces, but it's still a defense that is serviceable enough to get us another title run. And that's why I mentioned Cooper Beebe earlier. He comes back because that's the expectation, the run it back tour. They want to run it back and get another Big 12 title. And the big games that we had where we had opportunities to, you know, cement ourselves in getting there to Arlington, we came up short. And it's one of those where you're a good team, but you're not the great team that you thought you could be. So it's disappointing in that facet. And then to end the season the way we did is, it's almost unspeakable. You just don't even want to talk about it, how bad that game ended your season to go 8-4, which is not a bad record. Like 8-4 is kind of the Chris Kleiman level. That's what he does, is he's an 8-4 guy. But when you have the expectations that you have coming off the season that you had, 8-4 is not it.
Sounds, yeah, familiar. 8-4.
Where did I hear this before?
Chris Kleiman and Dave Doran have a lot of similarities, and Chris Kleiman's floor outside of a COVID season where half of the games you're playing your third string or fourth string, his floor is 8-4. And so for us at the state of the program where it is today, 8-4 is a disappointment in a lot of ways, because you had line of sight to 12-0 and making a CFP when you look at the fact that every single loss came by one score or less. So, I mean, you lose by 3 points in Austin to a team that's now playing in the college football playoff in Texas. So it's incredibly frustrating to lose those games the way you did. You've mentioned how that Duke loss was like three plays is how you lost that game. That's the Iowa State game for us in the snow that a lot of folks watched because of the appeal of that. But it's six plays over 30 yards and they didn't even see the red zone the entire game, which is mind-boggling that a team can win a game like that. So it ended on a sour note, but I think that can be redeemed by a good showing in the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
That was crazy. That game, I mean, snow was piling up on the helmets. We turned to like my community was like, dude, turn on this K-State Iowa State game. We all turned it on. Like, snow was piling up while they're in the huddle. You're like, well, this is ridiculous. How are they playing this game? That was wild.
It was an intense game. It's one of those, and I said this on our podcast, it's one of those where it's memorable to the point where like you could plaster that all over the stadium. You could plaster it all over memorabilia and, you know, anything that you wanted, but it's ruined because you lose that game. It's one of the most games that I'll never forget. And it happened to be a loss. It's just, it's sickening.
You mentioned Kleiman, right? And we talked a little bit about Dave and the similarities there. How do y'all feel? All right. First of all, explain to me the Bill Snyder situation. The guy's like 80 years old, retires. Prince comes in. It's terrible. Bill Snyder comes back to save the program, you know, does well, retires again, and then Kleiman comes in. How the hell did that happen? Like, what are we missing on the outside there?
It's funny. It's funny that like you said he was 80. He wasn't even 80 yet. He's actually no. He looked it. One, he's looked like an old man since I was born. And he is old, but Nick Saban is about as old as he is at right now that when Bill retired the second time. So it's like he was really falling off. And the first time he got us to heights that, you know, no one has ever sniffed around here. And number one in the country, Big 12 title, beat probably the, you know, quote unquote, the best team that ever existed in Oklahoma in 2003. He retires. Bob probably knows a lot better the hiring process of Ron Prince. But once we got rid of that cancer and bring him back, he gets us back onto the mantle. And it was a different process. He was more of a, in the first era, he was more of a innovator. He created the Wildcat offense. He made the mobile quarterback really, really popular, spread it out. And then when he comes back, it's Colin Klein and everybody's in a phone booth and we're going three yards in a cloud of dust. It was still effective, but you know, it wasn't sustainable with how old he was, how old his staff was, and how little he recruited. So it was inevitable. As soon as the writing was on the wall, he had to go. And unfortunate, because he's a legend.
Michael Bishop walked so Michael Vick could run, and did in the NFL. And the Ron Prince thing was weird. He was an assistant at UVA and had some local ties. I think he was from Junction City. I think he was at Dodge City Community College at some point, but it was just a strange hire. It never really quite made sense. And a lot of the players from that era in retrospect have talked about how he's kind of considered a sociopath. The dude probably has narcissistic personality disorder, and not that a lot of coaches don't have that, but he had it to a degree where it was toxic and created a lot of issues in the locker room. But it is kind of funny. If you look back at some of those Ron Prince staffs who was on those staffs, I mean, you've got some really interesting names. I would just encourage people to look at that, because Scott Frost and James Franklin, I think, were on the same staff at K-State.
Raheem Morris.
It was a fascinating staff, but the Snyder situation was weird. He comes back, he calms the waters, and 2.0 was never really quite the same as Snyder 1.0, but you did have those good years with Colin Klein, Tyler Lockett, Arthur Brown, just some really fun offenses and defenses to watch. And towards the end, it trailed off. And I think it was probably a good thing for K-State that he left when he did, or was asked to leave when he did, because it did usher us into a new era with NIL and the transfer portal that I don't think an 79-year-old, I think he was at the time, Bill Snyder would have been able to adapt to and capitalize off of.
I started watching, like really paying attention to college football in the late 90s and, you know, early 2000s. And I do remember, like, all I remember is K-State being really good. And I looked up the stats here, and 6 out of 7 years, Snyder won 11 games from 97 to 2003. Like, that's really unbelievable. That's impressive. You know, we were just talking about NC State trying to get a 10-win season for the second time in school history. My man did it 6 times in 7 years. Like,
and K-State was on the verge of becoming a D2 program in 1989 when he took over.
Yeah.
So it's really incredible to think about what he did with that program.
Uh-oh. Yeah, but what he was saying, I mean, we were on the verge of, you know, what they call it?
Futility U.
Futility U.
Article about it and everything.
Yeah, we were on the verge of not existing, and, you know, we hired this, he was the defensive coordinator, or no, offensive coordinator at Iowa.
No, Iowa.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean,
same staff as Kirk Ferentz under Hayden Fry, and Bob Stoops was on that staff, and it's really incredible when you look back at some of the assistant coaches that, I mean, we talked about Brett Bielema and Mark Mangino, two guys that Dave Doran was on the same staff as well, so interesting coaching tree, for sure.
It felt like an outsider that Snyder, like, he had some magical powers over K-State, and K-State couldn't win without him. Like, it was so strange. Bringing it now, you know, Kleiman's been pretty good. Slow start, but 10 games won the conference last year. Another 8-win season this year. What are your overall feelings? Like, the guy's, he's won. All he's ever done is won in his past, right? What are your feelings on the trajectory of the program now under Kleiman?
The trajectory is up. I'll put an asterisk on it because Kleiman he's a football guy. You know, he's one of those guys where he wants to just coach football. He doesn't really want to do all the other stuff necessarily. He wants to, you know, be in the defensive meeting rooms. He wants to coach the safeties. He wants to do that stuff. This stuff is not what he signed up for. And I know it's similar to the answer you gave us, but it's the truth. He's a winner, and the trajectory of the program is up because he's recruiting at a level that we haven't seen. And, you know, you'll go look at the recruiting rankings and be like, this is laughable. Why are you saying that it's up? But when you get a quarterback that we've never seen a talent like this outside since probably the 90s, Michael Bishop. I mean, these guys don't just walk through K-State's program. It's usually they're bouncing back from a Kansas kid that was highly rated, went to another school, came back. But he's doing things recruiting-wise which are essential for a program that needs to go up. And he's doing it, but how long will he want to do it is the question. I don't know.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it's going to come down to how well can he recruit without Colin Klein, because Colin Klein was an elite recruiter with K-State. And with him now at Texas A&M, we've done a good job, I think, of retaining a lot of the talent that was recruited by Klein for the most part, including Avery Johnson, who is that four-star Elite 11 quarterback who you'll see in the bowl game. But we've got another guy out of Erie, Colorado, who we just reaffirmed his commitment, but it was dicey there for a second. He took off, you know, he didn't have K-State in his profile or anything on Twitter, so it got a little dicey there. But I'm excited about Klein, and I've enjoyed what he's been able to do, because again, so far, with the exception of that COVID season, his floor is 8 wins, and he's got the 10 win season. He's got the Big 12 championship under his belt. And I feel like he used the momentum of that championship to his advantage with recruiting the portal well and recruiting high school talent well, which we've seen other coaches like Mike Gundy, when he wins a Big 12 championship, he doesn't necessarily capitalize on that. And that's been a big gripe of a lot of Oklahoma State fans. So I'm pleased with what Klein's done, and I'm only excited about the future. Just depends on how long that future is going to be.
And I'll say this to that point, our fan base, I think outside of, you know, you have the fringe fans, but you have a very realistic fan base to a degree where you're not Nebraska. You're not going to fire a guy because he's 9-3, 8-4 every year. That ain't going to happen at K-State. That is kind of where our program is, and you're a developmental program. You build up to a championship run. So the floor is 8-4. We're disappointed in it, but we're not, you know, nobody's saying, hey, we got to get climbing out of here. That's our guy.
Yeah. Again, the parallels are uncanny, right? I mean, everything about it. I know my people are going to listen to it, but like, damn, that sounds like us. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned it. One of the questions that I got for y'all was somebody in our chat. What was it like being called by SI the worst major college football program in the country years ago, he said. That's tough. That's crazy.
It's before my time. I don't know what it's like being called that, because my worst seasons as a fan in my lifetime have happened under Ron Prince and Bill Snyder toward the end of 2.0, outside of that one COVID season for Klein. So I don't know what that feels like, because having been born in 92, I was born after Snyder took the job, and I didn't see any of the doldrums. But you hear stories about guys who were, you know, my friend's parents and my parents and stuff, sneaking kegs into the stadium on a wheelchair. Like, you have a blanket covering a guy who's in a wheelchair, sneaking a keg into the stadium and getting in through the handicap section, because there is nothing better to do. It's just you sit there and you drink and you watch Nebraska score 60 points on you in a game in 1983 or something. It's just, you hear the stories, we know the lore, and we're thankful for where things are based on where we came from, but really glad I never had to experience that. I think the worst K-State team I've ever seen won 4 games.
Yeah, so what was that? Yeah.
There's another question that, again, is, I think this intentionally parallels NC State, but thoughts on Howard leaving the team and the teams he is linked to in the portal. Was there a large section of the fan base ready to move on from him and to hand it over to Avery Johnson? And then I'll go finish the rest of that question later.
I'll kick it off. I think from my perspective, and I think most of the guy, like the three guys on our pod, it made sense, right? He needed a change of scenery. We knew what we had in Avery Johnson in the future that he's going to have at K-State. You need to capitalize on that, because if he is an ounce of as good as people hyped him up to be, he's potentially going to leave after 2 seasons because he doesn't have a red shirt at this point. So he's already has his first season under his belt. I think for Howard, I compared this earlier in the season to puck luck in hockey. Will Howard this year and last year when he had his resurgence in that Oklahoma State game and the TCU game prior to that, he was throwing into a lot of tight windows, and he got a lot of quote unquote puck luck with how he was throwing the ball last year. And this year, he just didn't have that puck luck. We lost our best wide receiver, Malik Knowles, after the season to the NFL. And Ben Sinnott, when he threw it to Ben Sinnott, who's going to be the number three or number four tight end taken in the draft this year, Ben Sinnott could make those plays, but a lot of the talent we had at wide receiver just wasn't able to make those plays. And sometimes you make a slightly off throw, you don't have the right playmakers around you to make that grab. I think him going to, it sounds like he's committed to USC. He hasn't made an official announcement, but I've seen it reported by On3 and 247 that he's committed to USC. So feel free to correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think a program like USC is a good fit for him because you have that four-star, five-star talent at wide receiver who's able to make some of those grabs that maybe, you know, RJ Garcia wasn't able to make this year.
Damn, why you got to throw RJ under the bus?
He's in the portal.
Okay, yeah, that's true. He's not a K-State. I'll say my thing on Will Howard, he did his – the landscape of college football is – it's kind of eroded our minds in a way where, like, Will Howard leaving is a surprise. I mean, he's been here for 4 years. I mean, realistically, he shouldn't be here. Like, if this was 2014, like, he would not be on the team anyway. So, like, he did his time. It's time to move on. His offensive coordinator's left now, but you know, he did his time. He was a very serviceable quarterback. For a lot of K-State fans that are younger, kids that were born in 2012, they didn't get to see Colin Klein, and they're 11 years old. Will Howard is their greatest quarterback they've ever seen. That's their Mount Rushmore right there. So, you know, Will Howard is a guy. He was second team all Big 12 this past season, even without the puck luck, like you said. Very serviceable quarterback. I wish him all the best. He was my guy this year, but it is the Avery show now, and we're going to see it on the Pop-Tart Bowl.
What do you expect to see from Avery Johnson in his first start as quarterback, as I learned? What do you expect to see from him?
Oh man. The thing is, there's no quarterbacks behind him. I mean, we have a former, you know, he was a scholarship quarterback at Minnesota, transferred here as a walk-on, and I think he might be on scholarship now. I'm not entirely sure how that's working.
He had to apply to get a waiver from the NCAA because there's this strange rule around scholarship athletes who transfer and become a walk-on at their next destination are ineligible to play in the postseason. So he applied for and got the waiver, but okay. He was the best player in the state of South Dakota or something, which again, that's a shallow talent pool, but he was recruited by Klieman out of high school and we were his second choice, I guess.
Okay. But for me, the game plan has got to be, you know, you can't run Avery 22 times like you would versus Texas Tech in the middle of the season when you have Will Howard, who just got benched for that in that situation. But in this situation versus NC State, he's got to have the whole playbook. You can't just throw him out there and expect him to run it every play because there's nobody behind him if he gets hurt, one. And then two, you want to see what he can do with his arm and show that elite 11 talent that he has. What receivers? I mean, I don't know. What tight end? I don't know. But, you know, what I expect from him is a solid performance. He is a true freshman, but I want to – he's basically a sophomore now. I mean, the season's over. So he's a sophomore. You want to see the development, the growth. I want to see a 65% completion percentage, 200 yards passing, and 52 yards rushing with a dub. Let's go.
The thing about Avery, and we saw it in the Texas Tech matchup where he had five rushing touchdowns, and the way we described it on our pod is he's lightning in a bottle because he's just such a prolific and fun and electric player to watch.
The burst.
I don't know how he's going to fare against this NC State defense because this is an elite defense that he's going to be playing against. And he has not seen that level of defense. He's only seen it in limited snaps because he had limited snaps against Texas. And Chef, call me out on this if I'm wrong. Did he play against Troy at all?
No, he didn't play. He played first game versus SEMO, burned up first game. And then he played against Missouri in an all quarterback run situation, which was mind-boggling to a lot of fans right there. Then his next game was Texas Tech.
Because he didn't play against Oklahoma State.
Yep. When we wanted to see him. and we didn't see him. And then we see him versus Texas Tech. He goes for 5 rushing touchdowns. TCU, he gets his first career start at wide receiver. he balls out in that game going absolutely crazy because the splits were 50-50. Mm-hmm. Literally one series after another, Will Howard to Avery Johnson. Never seen that before. It was kind of nuts. So he's 50-50 there. And then, you know, we see him sparingly. Versus Houston, his first play, he fumbles the ball. Don't see him anymore after that. Texas, he gets a series, and it was a 3-and-out. Don't see him after that. And we haven't seen him the rest of the season.
Yeah. So that's what kind of begs the question of I don't really know what we're going to see.
Exactly.
He is still a freshman when we did see him after.
Sophomore.
Technically he's still a freshman, true freshman. But after that TCU matchup, we really didn't see him a whole lot. So I am curious to see how he does against an elite defense like the defense that Texas has, like the defense that Troy has, because the best two defenses he's played really are in like the 70s and 80s in defensive efficiency, and that's exactly. TCU and Texas Tech. So it's going to be really interesting.
So Kleiman's MO is creative run game, right? I mean, it's kind of what we think on the outside. It's like you're going to have a team that is going to do the right things, run hard, and you know, be creative in how they use the ball, how they use their running backs. You got two guys in DJ Giddens and Trayshawn Ward.
Not anymore.
Why
we're
not?
Trayshawn Ward's in the portal.
And y'all are going to be playing Trayshawn Ward next year if you're playing Boston College. So,
oh
yeah, right. Yeah. So DJ Giddens, we got one guy, and then some younger guys. We'll put it that
well,
way.
Okay, one well, younger guy, yeah.
1,000-yard back, right? I mean, he obviously can play.
He was the better of the two.
Who else is K-State going to try to funnel the ball to?
I think what we've wanted to see the entire season, because Kleiman's MO, like you say, is diverse running. And before he got to K-State, it was at North Dakota State, it was no surprise to see 4 running backs with a bevy of carries. Since he's gotten to K-State, it's been mostly 2. I mean, mostly 2 at maybe 3 that first year with Gilbert and I can't remember the other running back.
Trotter and Jordan Brown, right?
Yeah, Jordan Brown. But we have a freshman from Tampa, Joe Jackson. Not Michael Jackson's dad, but same name. He's a very hot, very sought after high school player, and we wanted to see him, but he's been banged up throughout the season, but he's finally healthy and he's going to be our running back too. True freshman. So I think that's who we're going to see get a lot of the carries. If we're not going to see Avery, you know, pull the ball. I don't expect to see him get 20 carries this game, but you will. His best attribute from what we've seen is his burst and his running ability. So you're going to see him probably carry the ball 8 or 9 times.
And the good news with Joe Jackson is he's preserved his red shirt. He only played in 1 game this season. So we really don't know what we're going to get as far as him playing P5 competition, because he has yet to play a Power 5 opponent. His first game and only game this season was against Southeast Missouri State.
But let me say this about the running game. We have DJ Giddings, who is a 1,000-yard back, and I would say he was snubbed for honorable mention All Big 12. We do have a bevy of running backs in this conference that are really
deep running back room in the Big 12 this year.
But DJ Giddings is a guy that is going to catch the ball out the backfield and run the ball. I mean, he had a game with 200 yards rushing and almost 200 yards receiving, almost. Or no, 100 yards receiving and 200 yards rushing. Versus UCF this game, this season. He's an elite back. You're going to see a lot of him. And the crazy thing is our offensive coordinator, you know, temporarily is our O-line coach, who is our running game coordinator. So you're going to see this very experienced O-line with a lot of gap schemes, a lot of zone schemes. We're one of the few teams that run almost a 50-50 split of both those schemes. So you're going to see a lot of that where DJ Giddens is going to be able to bounce it wide, but he's also going to, in the same look, be able to run it straight up the gut with a pulling center, a pulling guard. It's going to be diverse when it comes to the running game.
I probably should have led with this question. What is your portal situation right now.
Not too dissimilar from NC State to answer that question. We definitely have double digit guys in the portal. I think I saw NC State had 18 and you've got 8 in now from the portal. I think we have 13 or 14?
I think it's 14 is the official number and because 2
Kobe in. Was the last guy to leave, right?
He's the last. Kobe Savage, a starting safety. Was he an honorable mention guy?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I know the year before that he was second team all Big 12 with a torn ACL, which is nuts. But he was a valuable member of our secondary. He's gone. Trayshawn Ward, who you mentioned. Our entire quarterback room, except for Avery Johnson, gone. Our third string, talking about the quarterback, our third string quarterback is a wide receiver who played quarterback in high school. He's our third string quarterback, Ty Bowman. I love Ty Bowman. Huge special teams guy.
No, it's Max Marsh. No, Ty Bowman isn't actually the guy, right?
No, I'm not entirely sure on that. We're going to disagree on that one because number 8 is in a green jersey and Max Marsh wears number 6. We'll have to look into that one, but I'm pretty sure it's Ty Bowman. But yeah, we've lost quite a few. And you would say that they're, you know, high production players, but it's to the point where it's like either they were sniped in the NIL and when it comes to Kobe Savage, Oregon's going to throw Oregon money at him. It is what it is. You can't really compete when it comes to that. But a lot of the guys like Will Howard, Trayshawn Ward, they came in with a mindset that Trayshawn thought he was going to be the guy. DJ Gidden emerged, and he's a every down back. So, you know, unfortunately, he has to go. You know, he's not going to spend his fifth year here behind and split carries. So he leaves. That's not even
another guy.
Yeah. That was Nate Matlack, a rotation defensive end who second in the team in sacks. He committed to Pittsburgh. You know, it's guys like that. And it's not even considering the opt-outs. So I don't know what the opt-out situation, but I think the opt-outs that we have are more detrimental to our team than necessarily our transfers.
Yeah, because we've got a couple.
Who do you think is going to opt out? Sorry.
So Benson is confirmed to have been he's going to be opting out. And there are a couple of guys. One is Cody Stufflebean. He's on defense and he's not going to the next level. He's just done with football, it sounds like. Who are some of the other guys, Chef?
Phillip Brooks. He's our leading receiver at the wide receiver position in terms of receptions and I think yards.
Yeah.
He's a slot guy.
Sixth year senior.
Yeah, 6 year senior, which is weird because you would think your final game ever playing, you're not going pro. He says he is, but you know what? It is what it is. You would think you'd want to play in that. A free trip to Orlando, why not? I don't get the reason, but I'm not a kid that's an all level athlete. I never have been and never will be. But you know, those are guys, and Will Howard, obviously he's not on the team. So those are your three offensive guys right there, your two leading receivers and your quarterback not going to play in the game. It is concerning to a point, but like we were saying the entire time, the future, we're looking forward to the future. And this is basically a highlight of what we're going to see in 2024.
Yeah. I failed to mention that on with y'all, but NC State got a ton of guys in the portal, not a lot of production in the portal other than CJ Clark.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be the opt-outs that are going to be the interesting ones, like assuming Peyton Wilson opts out and, you know, I don't know who else may, but, I think that it's always hard, like picking bowl games and doing all this because you just, who wants to be there? Who wants to be playing? You know, I think that's where I feel good about State with Brennan Armstrong. Like it's his last game playing organized football. I'd take a guess. Right. And he's probably going to want to play. He's probably going to want to go out there on a high note. Right. It's not like he's going to sit out for the NFL draft. Like that's not in his cards.
So, and I asked you that question on our podcast, like, what's the team's mindset? Are they wanting to be here? And, yeah. You know, you ask the players, and you can look this up on YouTube, KSO, Go Power Cat. They all put the player interviews. They sound very excited like that. But, you know, from how the season started to how it ended, you don't necessarily know if the team really wants to be in Orlando. With the opt-outs, like I mentioned with Phillip Brooks, that makes you wonder, like, how much of the team really want to be in Orlando playing in a game with the edible mascot?
I mean, they want to be in Orlando. It's warm. It's not.
Man, yeah, that's true. That's true.
It's pretty warm down there, you know? So I don't blame them. They're going to want to be there. They're just not going to want to play football is what I'm taking a guess. All right. I'm going to get some questions from our people. What do you think of cheating Roy Williams and how he got Danny Manning to Kansas out of Greensboro? I don't know. It might have been before your time.
Yeah, that was way before me. Roy Williams he was a good coach at Kansas, but was he right before Self?
Yeah. Yeah, he was.
God right dang.
Self. He left in, what, 03, I want to say?
Left in the heat of the night, if I remember correctly. But
yeah, because he was Bill
Self's been there that long
before leaving, saying I'm not thinking about the North Carolina job or something like that.
Yeah. I don't give a shit about North Carolina. I know that quote verbatim.
So I don't really know that situation that well, but I just know that we weren't very good at basketball when Roy was there. They used to dog walk us. So
and Danny Manning is seared into our memory as in 1988. K-State lore, as far as men's basketball, 1988 is kind of considered the year where KU and K-State were essentially on equal footing, with the exception of K-State didn't have any of these Helms national championships from the 20s that, okay, they can claim those, whatever. I'm not saying that they don't matter. But 1988, K-State had more conference victories, had more conference titles, I think more Sweet 16 appearances than KU had at that point in time in the Big Eight. And in 1988, they end up winning the national championship. We lost to Oklahoma in the Elite Eight that year.
It was like basically like every team in the Elite Eight were almost all Big 12 schools. It was
OU,
nuts.
KU, and someone else.
Yeah.
That year is considered a kind of the divergence of the two programs, because we essentially went into obscurity until 2006 when we hired Bob Huggins. And it's not that you had Dana Altman at after Lon Kruger left too. So it's not like you didn't have good coaches, that you just had two guys after that weren't great. But Danny Manning is seared into our memory as like that guy and that team that don't like him. We don't like them.
Yeah.
The parallels are uncanny, because that's right around the time when NC State started self-imposing their own demise, and and then you just saw it was State Carolina. That was the rivalry, and it was right about the time when we decided to take ourselves off the playing field for whatever reason, and Duke Carolina became the thing, and that's the only thing you see everywhere, and it just like it pains me. Yeah. For the K-State people, I know y'all hate the KU fan base, but did you realize they're only about as obnoxious as the UNC fan base?
Dude, I don't know. I can't say that because I don't interact with North Carolina people on social media, but I will tell you what. The amount of burner accounts for KU basketball is,
oh my God.
I mean, there's can't be more people in China. There can't be. there has to be more burner accounts than there are.
We lost to Nebraska in men's basketball yesterday.
Oh, God.
And Fred Hoiberg did, I don't know how familiar your fans are with our NCAA tournament run last year, but we went to the Elite Eight, and in the locker room before each game, Coach Tang and everybody was playing Low Down by Lil Baby, and it became this big thing during March Madness. And Fred Hoiberg plays it after the game yesterday after we
lose. Trolling.
I retweet it because Nebraska has never once won an NCAA tournament men's basketball game in their entire history as a program. So I retweeted it and said something along those lines. And the only people in the replies were KU fans who are saying, oh, well, K-State's never won a national championship, and oh, yeah, natty-less losers. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you are rent-free, baby. Like, this has nothing to do with you.
God, I hate him.
The other question I got along that lines is, can we have your basketball coach? So, yes, we're familiar with
him. Well, he may be available as a result of our president, who we got from NC State. So, we'll see in April.
I'm convinced that, like, we're in the Spider-Verse with NC State, and they're, like, the other Spider-Man. We're, like, all pointing at each other. Like, what the hell is going on?
I mean, the K-State is a psyop by NC State to get yeah. Coach Tang to coach.
There we go.
I could see it.
That's smart. All right. How are y'all feeling about the K-State being favored by three?
If you go off my prediction, I think it's a good number. I think it's a great number. I don't know even how you predict this game. I mean, yeah, honestly, the ranked teams, I don't know how you feel about your team, but the team that we have right now is, I wouldn't go as far to say it's a shell of the team that we were this season, but it's not the same team. So I don't know how you could possibly put a number on it, because you, like we said, you don't know what you're going to get from Avery. And I mean, I think we're going to win, but you know, that's just the homer in me.
If I were a betting man, and I am, I am not touching this game.
Nope.
Personally, with real money. In our locks, every week we do a lock segment where we pick three conference games, one national game, and one sickos game. And for bowl season, we picked every single bowl game. And Chef and I did both pick the Cats in that, but I was feeling a lot more ambitious about the Cats than I do now, having looked and dove in and dug into the weeds with some of NC State's defensive statistics. So I'm not going to touch the game personally. I don't feel great about a 3.5 point line. If it was plus 3.5, I'd maybe touch that if they stay plus 3.5. But I would probably put real money on NC State at this point, personally.
All right. What's your Pop-Tart flavor of choice? What's the best flavor?
Oh, Chef's answer for this is sociopathic behavior.
Well, listen, I don't want to stir up anything in the NC State community, because they might come after me. I have some bold takes on Pop-Tarts. I'm a chef for a reason, so I don't want anybody attacking me, because I know what I'm talking about, all right? Listen, unfrosted Pop-Tarts are superior to regular Pop-Tarts. It just is what it is. For me, it's unfrosted blueberry, toasted with a little bit of butter on the bottom. Get after me if you want, whatever, fight me, I'll fight back. But if I do have to go chocolatey flavor, because you have to separate them, it's s'mores.
Yes.
S'mores is elite.
Winner.
I'm a brown sugar cinnamon Pop-Tart fan myself. Frosted, of course. I've done some trial and error too. The last 2 weeks I bought 3 boxes of Pop-Tarts each week on my grocery store run. So I still have yet to try the fudge. I haven't had the fudge one yet. I've had the s'mores. The s'mores is elite. Brown sugar cinnamon, obviously my favorite. And then I had strawberry this week and had blueberry last week. But I'm doing a little A/B testing with some of the Pop-Tarts, so I'll report back.
I love it. Last question. Y'all got me going on FSU getting snubbed. I'm going to flip this around on you. Who are your four teams that you would put in the playoff this year if you guys were on the committee?
Oh,
I know mine.
Go ahead, Bob.
Michigan, Washington, Texas, and FSU. Or FSU, Texas, however you want to seed those last two teams. Those are the four most deserving teams, in my opinion. And the best body of work across all 12 games, 13 games in some cases.
I agree. I'll say that before I say anything else. I do agree. Deserving and best are two different things. We can say that, and you can't disagree with that. Is Alabama better than Florida State if they played on a neutral field? Yada, yada, yada. Probably. But that's not what we signed up for. We signed up for a 13-game schedule, basically, if you played in your conference championship game, and they won every single one of them. You can You can look at, you know, how, what this quarterback did compared to this quarterback and all that stuff. But they won their games. So I think Florida State needed to be in. It would be now we're only going to get 2 years of this 12-team playoff, and it would it's going to be amplified even more because I don't know if you guys know this, but SEC and Big Ten are basically going to run that thing, and I think you're going to be in a world of shock when you see a four loss team get in over a 11-1. AAC team.
I do have to say, since I have an ACC audience for this, you can place blame on Commissioner Jim Phillips for starting the alliance with Kevin Warren and George Kliavkov, because if you do not have the alliance in place, you don't have the three conference voting block that eliminated expansion from happening a year earlier than it is currently happening, then we would have avoided this situation altogether. And at this point, we would be arguing about who has if I'm Florida State and I get left out, I would at least get a home game in the playoff as opposed to getting a first round bye. So you're essentially arguing, do you want a home game in the playoff or do you want a bye in the playoff? So you can place all of the blame on this on Commissioner Jim Phillips, in my opinion.
Everybody just needs to go independent, you know, and just get it over with. I think that's the only way we fix this. Bring it back to regional. Let the, you know, the women's sports and all that stuff go back to regional rivalries and have these football teams just be independent. I hate that. I like conferences because I grew up on that. But I think to fix the problem, we need independence in all for all the football teams, all the power, you know, five or whatever we want to call them. All those, I don't even know how many teams that is, like, 70 something, maybe
64, all, right?
64. Mm-hmm. Get all those teams just independent and have a Power Five commissioner and, you know, collective bargain these players, get them paid so we don't have to fight with NIL and all that stuff. Pay the good players, whatever. Let it be name, image, and likeness. If we're going to put, you know, Caleb Williams on a poster and he's on a commercial every 3 seconds, he needs paid more than our right tackle at K-State, but the right tackle at K-State needs paid, so he's not jumping in the transfer portal just because, you know, right, a team down the block is going to pay him. I think that's the only way we fix this, and it would make it more regional. So K-State would play the teams down the middle of the America, and we could have it the way we used to have it, but just everybody's independent. I think that's the only way to fix it. It makes me sick to my stomach that we have to lose the Pac-12 because the Big Ten and the Big 12 make so much more money than SEC than the Big 12 and the ACC. It's so stupid. I had a pretty big rant on this like a long time ago, but yeah, it makes me sad. But I think that's the only way that we fix it.
I mean, spot on. I did forget the whole alliance deal when I was going on my rant on your spot about my lack of trust in ACC leadership, because that is definitely one of the factors in there. Like, that whole thing is ridiculous. So, yeah. Fellas, I appreciate your time. I enjoyed it immensely. Please send me your stuff, your link, your profiles, all those things. I want to link them in our pod. I want to put out to our people because I know they'll be interested to hear what y'all have to say and everything else come the next coming week. But again, appreciate it. Hope you all have a good holiday. And hopefully get to do this again at some point. It's not the last time we play K-State in something.
Absolutely.
So, for sure. Yeah. I think we've got some non-conference games to fill out at some point. So
there we go. We've got get your president to talk to my president. Right?
Yeah. Oh, my God. He's not my president. All right. Yeah, appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Evan.
My outro wanted to work. It would be playing right now, but it is not working, so I'm just going to hang up and put it on later. Appreciate y'all.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks, buddy. Man. No, it's fun.